Morning.
Excellent. Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
Sorry for we're getting a couple minutes of a late start. We just were completing a special term calendar. And I am assuming you're all very familiar with Zoom. If you have any problems, technical difficulties, you can't hear one of us or vice versa, we will signal each other. Just make sure you introduce yourself at the start of your arguments, because there will be an audio recording of this available later, so that people can understand which lawyer's making which argument. Each side will have 15 minutes, with appellant having 5 minutes for rebuttal. And with that, Marshall, do you want to call our case this morning?
Yes, good morning. The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Chief Judge Siegel, Judge Hooten, and Judge Smith. The Honorable Chief Judge Susan Siegel is presiding. This is case A210610 in the matter of the civil commitment of Richard Allen Smuda.
Excellent. And with that, Mr. Wynott, please get started.
Good morning, and may it please the court. I'm here on behalf of Richard Allen Smuda. I'm his attorney, Malcolm Wynott, W-H-Y-N-O-T-T. It is our position before the court that the district court erred in its commitment of Mr. Smuda as both a sexually dangerous and sexually psychopathic personality. We have several reasons that we believe show the court was mistaken in its previous order. To begin with, we do not believe that there was evidence showing that Mr. Smuda engaged in a course of harmful sexual conduct necessary for the commitment. In reviewing the facts behind Mr. Smuda's legal difficulties, it is clear that there is a very serious events that took place in 1986 and in 1990. These were what Dr. Gilbertson, the second court-appointed examiner, determined to be hands-on offenses, which is a useful reference in distinguishing those events from other actions that Mr. Smuda engaged in. This 1986 and 1990 events were violent. Mr. Smuda was convicted after jury trial in 1986 and pled guilty in 1990. On both of those, he was committed to North Dakota Department of Corrections, where he was incarcerated for several years. However, those events are quite remote in the past. The most recent, the 1990 event, is over 30 years old. There has not been a subsequent hands-on sexual assault committed by Mr. Smuda in that time. Now, the district court found that there were other events that took place with Mr. Smuda that did rise to a course of harmful sexual conduct. And those can be grouped in two categories. There were several letters that Mr. Smuda wrote to people he had contact with while he was incarcerated or institutionalized. And those were of a graphic sexual nature. However, it is not clear that those were harmful in their nature, even though they were graphic, and it could be quite easily characterized as a misguided courting attempt by Mr. Smuda.
Counsel, what is it that, with respect to the factual findings about that, the harm, what are you alleging is missing? I mean, there's a factual finding that it is harmful, I think, to the people who received the letters. And also, I think the correctional officers who were subjected to what the court found was intentional exposure. So in reviewing that, what's missing in terms of making it from the record that would make that a clear error?
I believe it's a clear error in that there was no testimony other than from the examiners that the conduct was harmful. We don't have any statements that the officers found it harmful. You know, these were situations where Mr. Smuda was removed physically from the people involved. It was not as if they come around the corner of a stairwell and are confronted face to face with him. You know, these were events that would usually take place when Mr. Smuda was inside of his cell. Now, while he does not have an expectation of privacy there as he would on the street, he is removed from them. There is no fear from the people involved that they would actually be sexually assaulted. And so
the district court judge found specifically with respect to at least the two letters that constitutes harassment, and therefore it would fall within the rebuttable presumption in the definition of what's harmful. So how do you respond to that? Because that's what the court did here. Yes.
That was the court's finding, and we don't believe it was harassment, as with each of the recipients of those letters, there was only one letter. You know, there wasn't a course of letters where Mr. Smuda understands that this is unwanted behavior from his part, and then he continued it knowing that it was unwanted. These were initial letters expressing his interest in a way that he thought they had indicated would be appropriate.
So you're saying because it was a single letter that wouldn't necessarily constitute harassment within the meaning of the harassment statute?
Yes. You know, there could be a distinction between the severity of the letter, but if he had written a letter that wasn't sexually graphic, just said, you know, I enjoyed meeting you and I enjoyed our time together, would you like to engage in a correspondence? I don't know that would be grounds for harassment or harmful conduct.
Yeah, really, but question, I mean, that goes reading without saying. Yeah, yep, right. Yep. Okay.
Right. And so we don't believe that the letters and the later exposings gave rise to a harmful course of sexual conduct. We do also think when it comes to course of conduct, there should be some consideration given to the length of time since the last exposings. It's undisputed that there hasn't been anything since 2013. Now, while the case law is clear and that there is not any type of a bright line rule that says if it's a certain amount of years, then it's no longer considered to be relevant in this analysis. However, it does go to whether or not Mr. Smuda has the ability to control his sexual impulses that could be harmful. And when we have a situation where it's been over 30 years since he's had any types of hands-on contact with anybody, and 8 years since he's had non-contact exposing incidences, we do believe it shows that Mr. Smuda is clearly able to control whatever harmful sexual impulses he may have. Now, it is true that Mr. Smuda has been incarcerated or institutionalized for many years, and that he would have more opportunities to engage in misbehavior were he not in custody. However, the district court has it both ways. They say he does not get credit for the length of time when he is not committing assault. However, he is committing assaults while in jail. So he's being punished for having assaults against correctional officers, for having assaults against other inmates and violent behavior. And even though none of those were sexual, the court found he was able to engage in those activities, but then not give him any consideration for not engaging in any sexual assaults during that same time period.
Talking about the sexually dangerous person part of the statute, So you're not contesting that there's a sexual personality or other mental disorder or dysfunction. Is that a fair statement? Or
yes. Okay. That is a fair statement. Both examiners found that there was, and the record is replete with incidences that would qualify.
And so your line of argument is that there was not a course of harmful sexual conduct. And are you also arguing the third prong that as a result is likely to engage in acts of harmful sexual conduct?
I would assume. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. We do not believe the district court had sufficient evidence to find there was clear and convincing evidence of those points. You know, the time between the hands-on assaults being over 30 years, despite time in the community on multiple occasions, the time since the exposings and the letters of being over 8 years does demonstrate he has the ability to control himself and that he is therefore not highly likely to engage in future harmful sexual conduct. Even when he was discharged from the North Dakota program and residing with his mother in Minnesota, he did have dysregulated behavior, and that's not contested. He was committed by Becker County as mentally ill, and he did have several contacts in the communities with law enforcement and community members that were described as odd. However, in none of those events was there anything sexual involved. There were no allegations of him exposing himself. There were no allegations of unwanted sexual comments. There were certainly no allegations of any hands-on sexual assaults. Clearly, if Mr. Smuda was unable to control his impulses, then he would have demonstrated that when he was off his medications and acting in a dysregulated manner. Mr. Smuda may
have... Oh, excuse me. I appreciate your argument for sure about the... the distance away in time that the sexual misconduct occurred. Maybe it's not clear, but I'm just wondering, once Mr. Smuda is then released, he's out in the community, and he discontinues taking medications, is your argument that even though that obviously results in problems that actually led to his commitment, that he nevertheless retains, even though he's off medication, the ability to control his impulses with respect to sexual misconduct, despite the obvious sort of, I don't know if decompensation is the right word or not, that's happening in his life generally when he goes off medication? I think it's that's where I completely appreciate the issues that you've raised, but I also don't know what one does relative to his conduct when he's not on medication then, and how finally that can be parsed. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I believe that's exactly right, that even though he is discombobulated from not taking his medications, that does not result in any sexual acting out. And if he lacks the ability to control those impulses, which he may not even have considering his demographics at this point, that it would have displayed itself when he was out in the community discombobulated. It's quite clearly evident that he just does not have those sexual impulses, or if he does, he is able to control them. He may not be able to control his impulses around the food he is getting at his home or interactions in the community that may be odd, but they were not sexual in nature. And so we don't believe the state was able to demonstrate by clear and convincing evidence that he has this inability to control himself in sexual matters, which also goes to the psychopathic personality statute as well. You know, clearly, for whatever reason, whether it be the significant amount of treatment he completed in North Dakota, Mr. Smuda is able to control his impulses. And so he does not have the utter lack of power to control. And I don't believe that the state was able to demonstrate, or the court properly found, that he is highly likely to engage in future harmful sexual conduct.
Go ahead, Judge.
I just want to make sure I understand what your argument is here today. You're not claiming that the court erred by considering other conduct other than the two the two felonies for criminal sexual conduct that he picked up. I'm looking at the judge's order, and it just goes on for page after page of all the sexual misconduct that he exhibited while he was in prison, which was for a considerable part of the time we're talking about here. And you're not claiming the court erred as a matter of law by considering that misconduct and those incidents, are you?
No, the court is entirely allowed to consider those. However, we would dispute whether those acts rise to the level of misconduct.
Okay, so you're really disputing how the court weighed that evidence. Am I correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
And I see there's about a minute left. Are there any other questions from the court?
I had one question. We've got these two experts, and we don't, you know, and Dr. Gilbertson's opinion, you know, was, you know, much more nuanced, I guess, than the other opinion, but there's no experts on the other side saying, yes, he is, you know, he's not highly likely to engage in acts of harmful sexual conduct, or he has control over sexual impulses. So what are we to do with that?
Well,
we are not forensic psychiatrists. Yeah.
Your Honor, that's true. There is not an expert on the other side saying he should not be committed. However, nevertheless, the evidence still must be clear and convincing that he be committed. And we do not believe that it does meet that standard and that should be vacated and remanded, Your Honor.
Okay, any other questions from the panel? And then you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal as well. Mr. Cashman, go ahead. Wait 1 minute for the clock. There you go, all right.
Good morning, Your Honors. It's good to see you this morning. Good morning, Mr. Wynot. Thank you for letting us appear. My name is Noah A. Cashman, C-A-S-H-M-N. I'm appearing on behalf of Becker County. I'm employed in Minnesota Attorney General's office, and we handle these cases under referral under Chapter 8 of the Minnesota statutes. Your Honors, I'm going to touch on a couple things that Mr. Wynot raised before I move on to my presentation. First of all, Mr. Wynot spent quite a bit of his time talking about a course of harmful sexual conduct, and he talked about there was no showing that it was in fact harmful to the, what I'll call the category of non-hands-on offenses. But that's not what the statute requires, and that's not what the case law requires. The statute requires is a conduct that creates a substantial likelihood of serious physical or emotional harm. And that's what the experts talked about. There was no dispute that the type of behavior that he exhibited in prison and in the sex offender program in North Dakota, the non-contact offenses, the two letters to the two female correctional therapists, that it was conduct that creates a substantial likelihood of serious physical or emotional harm. And so that's the standard, not whether there was in fact harm. And as far as there would being no testimony from those individuals, I would point out that the district court, even though there are, and Mr. Smuda has a lot of records and they go on ad nauseum about his exposure and masturbation and harassment, identified correctional officers that he exposed or masturbated in front of in prison. And even Dr. Gilbertson, whose opinion was nuanced, talked and testified about how, yes, he would concede that, you know, Mr. Smoot is in a setting where he couldn't complete the sexual assault. And so certainly Mr. Smoot, when he's doing that kind of behavior, is in his sexual assault cycle. So, And the second issue that Mr. Wynette seemed to focus on was the remoteness of the two hands-on serious violent offenses back in 1986 and I believe in 1990. But the case law is crystal clear under SDP and SPP commitments that, for example, even good behavior in the context of these sex offenders, good behavior in a confined setting is no indication of anything. And so here you've got literally decades of bad behavior. Mr. Smuda, both while he's in prison and while he's in the sex offender program. And it's not just sexual behavior, it's violent behavior. He picks up, I believe, two violent felonies while he's in the different programs. And I would also ask the court, you can go back and look at, for example, when Mr. Smuda went through his final discharge proceeding and was ultimately discharged by the North Dakota Supreme Court, the district court in North Dakota went through and talked about his behaviors, and that's at exhibits 10-12-18 and 10-1219. And it goes, talks about a lot of the information that we have, but this indecent exposure, there's sexual harassment, talks about his, what Mr. Wynette thinks is his most recent behavior in 2013.
So, but it Mr. all touches. Cashman, if I can just interrupt you for a minute,
sure.
In the interest of time, how do you respond to Mr. Wynette's argument that there really is no evidence of any sexual related behavior since 2013? And there are, and I didn't read the entire record thoroughly, but I did read sections of it fairly thoroughly. And it looks like he was doing pretty well in the sex offender treatment program in North Dakota, more or less, and that he completed most of the units before the North Dakota Supreme Court ordered him released. So what do we do with that?
As both examiners testified, he didn't really make great progress. He made some progress for sure. But that's because he was psychiatrically stable in the sense that he was taking his medication. And I was leading up to the point where if you look at the exhibits that I just referred to, the district court order, his last sexual behavior was in 2016, where he said he was masturbating to fantasies consisting of when he exposed himself to female staff members. And both Dr. Gilbertson and Dr. Alsdorf testified that, and Dr. Alsdorf actually talked about his hypersexuality. And so even when he was committed mentally ill to the Anoka Metro Regional Treatment Program, the court put this in the findings, he showed up at the program and said something like, where can I masturbate? Can I masturbate out here or in my room? So he still talked about masturbation. And that comes down to what I submit is really the only issue in this case is, it's not an issue, but is the constitutional nexus between his ability to control his harmful sexual impulses and his disorders. And Dr. Gilbertson and Dr. Alsdorf both talked at length about this, and this shows up in his treatment records in North Dakota and was kind of one of the issues with the North Dakota Supreme Court ruling that released him, which is when he is unmedicated, he is highly likely to sexually reoffend. He has a course, he has a sexual personality and a mental disorder. He's highly likely to sexually reoffend under all the scoring tools. He meets virtually all the case factors and statutory factors for SPP.
So let me ask you another question on the SPP prong here, part of the statute. So North Dakota, it sounds like their SDI, sexually dangerous individual statute. I mean, the North Dakota Supreme Court releases him, orders him released, because the evidence was inadequate for constitutional reasons that he's utterly unable to control his sexual impulses. And so why, without any new conduct, you know, new offenses, and you can have fantasies about masturbation, you can masturbate, you know, privately, and that's not a crime. So why he's been ordered released under what is kind of our SPP prong of the statute, how can Minnesota turn around and say, oh, now we're committing you again? I mean, do we take, is it res judicata? I know it's a decision of another court, but it's a constitutional, United States constitutional issue that court was dealing with. So what's your response to that?
That's a great question, Your Honor. And the issue is that if you read the North Dakota Supreme Court order releasing him, what they talked about is the district court made insufficient findings on that element. And what it was is, if you look back in 2008, the district court had been slapped for the same thing. And the North Dakota Supreme Court said, well, you only have this issue with not taking two dosages of olanzapine. We don't think that's enough of a finding to determine that he meets that element. But in this case, he was released, he moves back to Minnesota. And as both the doctors said, when he's unmedicated, he's highly likely to sexually reoffend in the future. And what does he do? He's only back a few weeks. He goes off his medication. The findings are replete with how he went off his medication. Mr. Smuda even called as a witness his brother, Eugene Smuda, who is a psychiatric nurse, talked about how they went on a fishing trip up to Rainy Lake, and he noticed he was starting to act differently. You have an incident at the bank where he goes down to the bank and makes some really strange statements, and ultimately ends up in a physical confrontation with the sheriff's deputies in Becker County, where he's tased twice.
Okay, so we know, so we're familiar with those facts. So your argument is that because it's not just missing two doses, he's gone off his meds and he's psychotic. And so that somehow or another satisfies the utterly unable to control your impulses prong of SPP. I mean, is that in essence your argument?
That's the factual background. It's also the district court in this case made a lot more findings on his sexual personality and other mental disorder. I mean, we have, you know, over 100 pages of findings. So it's not like the district court in North Dakota, which only made, I believe it was 4 pages of findings on the whole recommitment. So it's a sufficiency of the findings question that I believe the North Dakota Supreme Court was upset with. And you can go back and the same thing, the North Dakota Supreme Court found the same issue in, I believe it was 2008, but they were reversed and remanded rather than releasing him. So I think it was
right. No, I saw that. But this district court then just releases him, did not say, oh, I did. I mean, I won't belabor that, but go on with your argument.
It's the thing that stuck out to me when we got this case, Your Honor, but really what it is, it was the North Dakota Supreme Court engaging in some appropriate policing of the district courts and essentially admonishing them to complete more thorough findings on all the elements. And so if you look at that, that's what that was about. And the nugget you can take away from both the North Dakota Supreme Court order releasing them and kind of what was going on with Mr. Smuda is that this is an individual whose risk and his sexual offenses and his whole being, when he is unmedicated, he is an extremely dangerous individual. And Dr. Gilbertson talked about that. And ultimately, that's where he ended up when he was out in the community. Now, Mr. Wynott says, well, he didn't commit any new sex offenses. But think about it. He was, you know, he was back in custody within months. So it's not like he was out in the community and had a lot of time to prove that he was low risk. And actually both examiners talked about this, and they kept coming back to, you know, if he is unmedicated, this is an individual who's extremely dangerous. And I'm going to take the last few minutes to talk about with Mr. Smuda, the issue of risk. As I stated before, both examiners came back and said he was high risk on all the risk assessment instruments. And the other thing the court pointed out that Dr. Gilbertson was, I think he used the word nuanced, and Mr. Why Not used that in his brief as well, in making these arguments or in making his opinion. But really what this comes down to is the district court, the Becker County District Court in this case, weighed the evidence and wrote some, I think they're really good findings. They go on at length and talking about why, for example, he found Dr. Alsdorf more credible, that he found both credible, but finding him more persuasive with each and every element of both the SDP and SPP statute. And so ultimately, what Mr. Wynot is arguing is that this court, this appellate court, should reweigh the evidence and throughout the district court's decision. And of course, In re NOPS, K-N-O-P-S, and the rules of civil procedure say that, you know, the district court is supposed to weigh the evidence, and the appellate courts are not supposed to re-weigh the evidence when it comes to these type of matters. So the county proved its case with each and every element of SDP and SPP. And I don't believe that issues raised by Mr. Smuda are meritorious, and we'd ask the court to affirm the commitment as a sexually dangerous person and a sexual psychopathic personality. Thank you.
Can I ask you one question? In determining the risk of future dangerousness of this individual, I mean, when I look at that N. Ray Linehan case, one of the factors you look at is whether there's been violent behavior, and is it all violent behavior? Is there any limitation that it only has to be violent behavior in the context of sexual acts, or is it all violent behavior?
Let me give you a nuanced answer. It's all violent behavior, but it starts with, there has to be some sexual behavior as part of that. And of course, that's what it is. And also with regard to Mr. Smoot is, and this goes back to one of Mr. Wynot's points is, for example, when you're talking about harmful sexual conduct or a course of harmful sexual conduct, or with the SPP statute, habitual misconduct in sexual matters, not all the sexual behavior has to arise to that level of harmfulness. So that's why a lot of times in these type of cases, peeping, masturbation, sexual fantasization, you know, things that might not have a victim or might not be harmful in and of themselves, but they're relevant. And with regard to Mr. Smuda, all of his violence is relevant because it occurred, especially within a confined setting, and why he was seeking treatment. And I hope I answered the court's question.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Why Not, proceed, and we will give you a couple of extra minutes because we gave Mr. Cashman a bit of extra time.
Well, thank you, Your Honor. And I believe most of the points have been made, but I would like to address one point in rebuttal. And that concerns Mr. Smuda's behavior in 2019, after he had been discharged from North Dakota, goes off his medications. He comes into contact with law enforcement, and he eventually ends up quite soon at the Anoka Regional Center. And he asks, where do I masturbate? Do I do it here? Do I do it in my room? Because he knows that there are rules for that. And even though he is discombobulated and dysregulated, and he has gone off his medications, what would be the height of concern for the community if he is a danger? And he asks, he's like, where is it appropriate that I do this? Because he is looking for a safe place, because he does not want to be in trouble. He does not want to offend anybody. And rather than taking risks, he inquires about what is the best place and method for this to happen. That is not the act of someone who is unable to control his harmful impulses. It's quite the opposite. It is someone who understands he has these impulses and is able to control them. And so he acts in an appropriate way. How can I address this issue? And on that basis, it was error for the court to find that he was unable to address these issues, that he lacked control, that he lacked the ability to control his harmful impulses. So we are asking the court to set aside this matter and have Mr. Smuda either remanded or the conviction or the commitment vacated. Thank you.
All right, any questions from the panel? All right. Well, thank you both for your arguments and briefing. It's quite a lengthy record here. And you both really helped us focus on the critical issues. So thank you so much. And this case is now taken under advisement, and we will issue our opinion within the statutory time period. So this court now stands adjourned, and thank you both.